Taking a ride on the Freedom Train podcast series. I'm your host, Dope Roy. And as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. And remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by Pax Inc. That's P-A-C-T-S-I-N-C. And Pax Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics, which traces hard work, honesty, and integrity. And if you want to learn more, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, learn more about their code of conduct, or become more familiar with it, become more familiar with the members of the organization, how you can become a donor, how you can get involved. And if you help your mouse over the More tab, you will get more, like the Learning Center and the store. If you have your tab over Learning Center, you see all the resources that pop up. So make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can get all the greatest podcasts in the world under one umbrella. Remember, every Monday you get Fix Sports Podcast. Every Wednesday, you get this lovely show, the Freedom Train Podcast Series. Every Thursday, you get The Fly, Lessons from the Screen, hosted by Patrick Irvin. And every Friday at 10:30, you get the live showing of the Enigma Step Hour right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. And make sure you subscribe to the Enigma September YouTube channel as well as the Freedom Train Network YouTube channel. And remember, we're available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Radio Public. Bam! In your mind. Ain't that right, Pat?
Word.
There you go. You channeling in your R&B, your inner R&B.
Yeah, buddy. Rolling like a big shot. Chevy tuned up like a NASCAR pit stop.
Man, speaking of R&B.
Hey, wait, NASCAR pit stops don't tune up cars.
Man, stop trying to think about that man lyrics, dog. You just flow with him, dog.
Okay.
See what I'm saying, dog? But, hey, speaking of R&B, you know John B. Remember white boy John B.?
Yeah, he married a black woman.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. But him and Donnell Jones got a new song, man.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it's good, too. So,
it
90s good. R&B. Good R&B look like he might be trying to fight for something. So
about time.
That City Girls make me itch.
City Girls, that's all of them fools. Who's that fucking Lil Wayne lookalike down there stealing people's songs?
Who?
I forget the dude's name, doing covers of everybody's song.
Oh, the Jacquees dude?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he the king of... He the king of, you know, them dudes who be in the bathroom and the club selling condoms and cigarettes and back in Miles and cologne. He's the king of them.
Now is he baby's new booty toy?
I don't know. So word, this is not Joseph Ward's words. This is just word on the street that because you know Baby and Toni Braxton was engaged, right?
That's what I heard.
So, from what I was told, which I've never confirmed, because I never cared to confirm, but from what I was told, Toni Braxton broke up with him because she walked in and found him in the bed with Dwight Howard. Now, do I believe that? No, but that's what I was told.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I guess it's not outside the realm of believability, but...
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's not outside the realm because the reputation of both men, but do I believe it? It's kind of hard to believe. So, yeah, man. But other than that, man, you know, what you been up to, bro? It's been a week, man. What you been up to?
Man, you know, been chilling, trying to get done what I can get done when I can get done. We had a track meet yesterday, so, you know, the team went out there. They did. They thug Thizzle. Made all the other little kids cry.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. They showed up, man. Little kids showed
That's what's up.
So,
get your track on.
Yeah, you know, little coaching thing. I still want to go back to the little personal training thing. I don't know how much I like coaching a bunch of kids at once. But, you know, things been going good. Trying to work on the book. Got some other things going on. Body is responding negatively to stress. So, trying to stay de-stressed. But it is what it is. You know, everybody got problems.
Yeah, man. Sound good, though, man. Sound good. No, you a warrior, though. You born on St. Patrick's Day, and your name Patrick, so you're going to make it through because you got magic, though.
I wish I could use it at will.
Man.
What's up with you, man? What's your week been like?
Hey, man. Busy. We had a storm come through the other day. Yeah, it didn't do nothing but make us come to work at 12 o'clock, but then it got cold. But I might have pushing this book, man, on the shoulders of giants, Volume 3, South America, available now on the shoulders of giants. I mean, at ontheshoulders1.com or ontheshoulders.org. So, pushing my book. You know, I started season 4 of the Fix Sports Podcast. So, episode going to be available for masses tomorrow, available for those on Patreon tonight. So, if you want to be part of the early crowd, you got to follow me on, support me on Patreon, patreon.com. Fit is doing that. And then I hit trying to show these women that one of y'all need to fall in love with me. Too many women talking about they want a man, but don't want to fall in love with me. You being contradictory.
Are they being contradicted? Or maybe they just not. Maybe the women saying that are different from the women that you meeting.
Hey, dog, don't be trying to think about my situation. Now, let me live and lie.
All right. Well, you know, that's the current state of where everybody want to be. So I am kind of over trying to pull you out of it. My fault.
Yeah, I mean, you know, trying to make me be great in life. What's wrong with you?
I'm a bad friend, man. I'm a bad friend.
I mean, come on. Wouldn't you lead me into a burning building instead of trying to save me out? So.
You know what? I should just, you know, roll a barrel of gasoline in there.
Hey.
You know, that's what a good friend would do. See you burning and just try to kill you quicker. Put you out of your misery.
Hey, man, something else I was going to say. I forgot it now, but it's all good. Hey,
so
man,
what we got today?
Well, we got a couple topics that we're going to talk about. You know, we've had interviews the last 3 or 4 weeks, so we kind of are behind on the Nipsey Hussle topic, so this will be us giving our take on not necessarily what happened to Nipsey, but a lot of the fallout after the situation. Of course, you know, we give our condolences and things like that. But that'll be the last thing we talk about. But I want to talk about this Notre Dame Cathedral burning down and the overwhelming support that so-called Christians and philanthropists gave to it versus the underwhelming support that the victims of the cyclone in Mozambique got. So we're also going to juxtapose that to the conversation surrounding the black churches that were burned in Louisiana that are not getting support, the same support that the Notre Dame Cathedral is getting. And the third topic is going to be talking about H.R. 40, which is a commission to study and develop reparation proposals for African Americans Act. So we're going to read this act and talk about how bullshit it is, as you got to do a research on reparation proposals. And in the past, we had to do that to give out reparations. You just gave them shit, that stuff. But we're going to start with this cyclone versus this Notre Dame. versus the black churches. That's where we're starting at. So, Pat, you good at this. Bring the people up to speed on what happened in Mozambique with the cyclone, if you don't mind, my brother.
So a cyclone to die, and basically a cyclone is a hurricane. Cyclone, hurricane, you know, and typhoon. They're all basically tropical storms that carry a lot of wind and rain, and they spin in a circle. But depending on where they are, where they develop in the world, that determines what they call them. So this, for us in America, this was a hurricane. But because it happened where it happened, because it developed where it developed, they call it a cyclone. So Cyclone Idai hit Southeast Africa around mid-March. I want to say March 15th. Or so it made landfall, brought heavy rains to the Madagascar area, which is right off the coast of South Africa, or the Southeast African coast. But the storm actually made landfall right at Mozambique, and it carried forward and did extreme damage to Malawi and Zimbabwe as well. And so the damage was severe. Not only was the rain torrential, causing homes to flood and causing many people to, you know, essentially be drowned in their houses, the houses were flooded. But the rain continued for up to 7 days after the cyclone passed. More than 1,200 people have died, and that number keeps going up. More than 3 million people have been negatively impacted by this storm. Millions of people have fled the area. Millions of people have had their homes destroyed. It's estimated that as much as 17, or I'm going to try to look at this number here. It's estimated that more than 18,000 homes were destroyed. So it was just bad. Then they have flooding. After the flooding comes, you know, with the houses and things, everything, the structures are weakened. So then after all of that passed, you had things collapsing on each other. And in one city in particular, more than 90% of the infrastructure of the city was destroyed. More than 90%. That means that virtually an entire city was destroyed. So you're talking about, like I said, more than 1,200 people dead. I'm looking at an estimate when I say 1,400. More than 1,200 people are confirmed dead as of this moment. More than 3 million people have been displaced. 18,000 homes destroyed. You're just looking at a massive mess of stuff. More than 2,000 people have been confirmed injured. It's just bad. So, you know, this storm was massive. It affected three states, numerous millions of people, hundreds of thousands of buildings, and blah, 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 blah. It was just bad all around. And with regards to the response to it, as of April, as of last week, there has been about $20 million of aid raised for the area. So the UN says that it's going to take $121 million to be able to provide food for everybody. Okay, so here's the numbers. I found it. So the UN says it needs $121 million for food programs in Mozambique alone. But the United Nations has only released $20 million of its emergency funds for the entire area. So outside of that, most of the money that's been raised has been raised by Mozambicans and Zimbabweans that are living outside of the country. And the total of that, from what I'm looking at here, looks like they haven't even raised $1 million in support yet. So, you know, so basically, it looks like in total there's been less than $30 million raised as a whole for this area. Now, the total damage estimates that I'm reading, it says that they're going to need roughly $2 billion to rebuild the area to be comparable to where it was already. And obviously, they're a long way off from that. Everybody's calling for donations. The Red Cross is there. Doctors Without Borders are there. There are a number of organizations there trying to do what they can to help people. But largely, when you need $2 billion and you've only managed to raise about $25 million, you know what I'm saying? Like, what can you do? You feel me?
I mean, yeah, like, well, I'm looking at something on Reuters, and Reuters is in agreement with the the World Bank estimating it $2 billion to recover, but it's saying, this according to Reuters, it's saying Mozambique's $337 million humanitarian response plan largely made up of an appeal for $281 million after the cyclone hit, only covers about 20% of the funds needed. I don't know if money was given to them already, but this one is starting off saying the International Monetary Fund will grant Mozambique $118.2 million credit facility to help it rebuild the infrastructure after a devastating cyclone that killed hundreds of people. Now, I guess the numbers can fluctuate. We don't know.
I saw that one with the IMF willing to credit them.
Yeah, but that's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing. And then I wanted to address this after we talked about it a little bit. I wanted to get my numbers from an African news source to see what the people felt. And so I got my numbers from a news source called Quartz Africa. And so it is from what I could tell. And I got sent to this place by someone that I know that's from Somalia. So, and they said that it was a place that represents continental news from an African standpoint. And so that's why I chose to come here and use this source. But I did look at, I didn't look at the Reuters report that you're looking at, but I did look at other sources that talked about the IMF. But because when I came here and went to a couple other African news sources, there was no mention made of the IMF credit. I just, you know, we know there's a difference between a credit and actually being given the funds. But since there was no mention made of it, I was just like, well, are the people getting it? And that was going to be something I was going to bring up during the conversation. There is some aid being given, but it looks like the people on the ground aren't receiving the aid, if that makes, you know what I'm saying? So go ahead, though.
No, I'm just saying, saying the numbers from the Reuters. Now, the controversy or some of the controversy surrounding that is humanitarians, Catholics, Christians, leaders and things have flocked to donating to the Notre Dame Cathedral. And what it said is going to, some people have pledged, you have billionaires like competing to see who can pledge the most. Like I've read somewhere where it's like between 2 to 4 billionaires competing all to pledge between $100 and $200 million to help build the cathedral. The last time I looked at the numbers, and the numbers I saw, the numbers Pat saw were a little bit different. Pat had a little more, but it was at least $700 million. I think almost $700 million have been raised to rebuild the cathedral. But like a whole lot of money has been raised, aggressively raised for the cathedrals by the humanitarians, the Catholics, the Christians, all the people who are supposed to be pro human, pro life, pro spirituality. I love God and all these things. I help the poor. But it's like it's aggressive help for the cathedral, which nobody died, but it's minimal help and credit for Mozambique. So it's like on a worldwide scale, like why people fronting out here? Let's just be real. It's like we understand the stark differences in these situations, but. And some of the differences is, you know, a black nation, the Notre Dame Cathedral, you know. So looking at it from that aspect. It's not like I'm expecting these people to be different, but we're just speaking on some of the rhetoric and some of the talk that's been out and trying to put our perspective on it, because you can see the differences in the support to where the Notre Dame Cathedral is the thing to do. Like, you have to help rebuild this cathedral versus, oh, I ain't even know what was going on, or dang, I hope those people from that cyclone are safe. So it's stark differences in the response that both situations got.
Yeah, I mean, the cathedral, from what I saw there, raised almost $1 billion, and by now it's probably over $1 billion to rebuild a cathedral. The cathedral is a, you know, the French government was going to sponsor the rebuilding of that cathedral anyway, so it's not like the money was needed, but I'm sure the French government is happy to have it. But it's not so much about being mad at people for donating to rebuild a cultural landmark like the Notre Dame Cathedral.
Not to cut you off, my bad, but I would say it's not to be mad for us, for like me and you.
Right.
It's others who are furious, and that's one of the reasons why we're talking about it. I just want to put that context out there before.
Right. We're not mad. And I'll speak for myself, even though you just agreed, but I'm not mad at anybody for choosing to donate money to rebuild a cultural landmark that they feel is significant. And if I was a French millionaire or billionaire, I probably would donate money to restore a portion of my country's history as well, my country's cultural exportation of whatever. I would probably pay to maintain that as well. The beef is, like Joe said, with all of the quote-unquote humanitarians, all of the people that are like life over buildings, life over this, life over inanimate objects, life over that, this, that, and the third. Also with the news coverage, even though we know the media is going to support the bigger story and the things that they have about that can generate some sort of conversation. But if more than 1,200 black people dying from an extreme weather event,
right,
that displaces millions and affects millions of people negatively, if you can't figure out how to generate coverage that's going to create a pulse with that type of information, then we have a serious problem in our society. And the fact that the Mozambique story, the Mollywood story, the Cyclone of Die story, the fact that so many people don't know about it, don't know the extent of the damage that was done, so little money has been raised for it. If the United Nations knows that it's going to take $121 million to do things just in Mozambique alone, why would they only release $20 million?
Yeah.
You know, and I am putting that squarely on the United Nations, because we know the United Nations has more than $20 million in their reserve.
Right. They can do a lot more than that and have.
Right. And so, in the face of everything that's going on, when you contrast these two situations, and again, it's not to be critical of people that donated to Mozambique or to Notre Dame, and we know that people can donate to multiple causes, multiple issues. Joe and I do it all the time. But it's also a fact of, as black people and as so-called humanitarians the world over, where is the concern or the care when over 1,000 people die because of a storm? You know, nobody died when Notre Dame burned down.
Right.
All these people died. They lost their homes, displaced. 90% of a city's infrastructure was destroyed. You're talking about an event that negatively impacts millions and millions and millions of people. And a full month later, they still haven't raised more than $150 million in support. Meanwhile, within 24 hours, $1 billion was raised for the Notre Dame Cathedral. And that, again, that's not to attack anybody. That's just to point out the hypocrisy of the world we live in. That's just to point out, you know what I'm saying, the uneven nature of things. Like, stuff like that has to be pointed out. Where's the humanity in that? You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's like I figured out a long time ago that a lot of humanitarians are, that's their lane to be a celebrity. So it's fake humanitarian because they only help who they want to help. And it's like, you're going to get, if you help the right people, you know you're going to get praised for it. So it's like you went to a celebrity. But another thing that I think about, another angle that I look at it is like, you have a story about a chief from the Ivory Coast who, you know, stepped up to the plate to donate money to the cathedral. But even in looking at that, is there are a lot of African billionaires, a lot of African American billionaires, but a lot of Black billionaires, period.
Well, there's millionaires. There's only, I believe, 2 or 4 Black African American billionaires, so it's not, can't say it's a lot.
Well, I meant more millionaires. That's what I really meant. But
I get you, though.
But there are some billionaires out there. But the millionaires, yeah, we have a good amount of millionaires.
We do.
And if people wanted this fixed, if people wanted the help, just like with Flint, Flint, Michigan, if they really wanted it fixed, it would have been fixed. Just like the cathedral raised $1 billion in less than 24 hours. So now, if you're Black and you mad at white people for supporting white people's stuff, and you ain't supporting Black people's stuff, you need to kiss your own ass. I'm just saying. Because think about it, that's why I start off saying what I'm saying. Now, I meant to say millionaires instead of billionaires, but we have enough Black millionaires around the world to be able to fix our own problems, but we choose not to. Because a lot of times, we know for some people, it ain't in their best interest to be humanitarian to Black people.
So, I mean, and money goes so much further. Like, one U.S. dollar is equal to $65 in Mozambique money. So, you know, like, your little hot $5 could potentially go very far over there towards helping somebody. So you don't even have to be rich to help people. And there are plenty of ways that you can help. You can donate to some of the organizations that I mentioned before, because we definitely want to let people know where they can go to help. So you can go to doctorswithoutborders.org and donate. You can go to, there's 220 GoFundMe accounts for various different situations happening in Mozambique. You can go to GoFundMe, find one, look it up, make sure you verify that it's straight, you know, that it's not on no crazy shit. And there are ways that you can do that through GoFundMe. I'm looking at a GoFundMe account right now that was trying to raise $25,000 to keep Cyclone to Die survivors alive. So there are various different ways that you can help out. It's one of those things where when you really want to help, sometimes you just got to go look for ways to help. Everybody can't just always give you an exact way to help, but there are multiple ways to help out. So I wanted to make sure that we gave people various different ways that they could go to help. That being said,
we're going to drop some links, and we're going to drop the links in the description of the show.
Right. So that being said, we can't be mad at white people for supporting Notre Dame. We shouldn't be.
Right.
You know, like that's foolishness to be mad at white people for supporting their culture and their heritage. Right. Like and that's why I said I'm not mad. I know there were some of the poor people in France are mad at the rich people in France because they're having their whole social issue over there right now with poverty and
that's
all
different.
Of that.
They have a right to be mad. They're over there being shunned.
Right, and that's exactly where I was going. They have a right to be upset. And that, you know, like that, I'm not mad at them for being mad either. But if your Black ass is sitting over here in America and you mad at white people for supporting the rebuilding of Notre Dame, your priorities are mixed up.
Yeah,
like,
you're
backwards. Why are you begging? Like, that's like begging them to give us money to help us build our shit instead of us trying to build our shit ourselves. That's essentially why you mad, because you wanted them to give you that money to build your community. And that's foolishness.
Because like I was saying on my sports show earlier today, we got the money. Black America has the money to do what we need to do. And Black America's biggest problem is, really, let's just be real, Black America is more of an idea than an actuality, because we're just a bunch of black people in America. To be really, to truly be Black America, we would have to work as one, as an organism, and we don't. We're just a bunch of black people in America, and that's our issue. We have so many individual bases. We refuse to work together, that we always be mad at our lack of ability to help ourselves, because we refuse to work as a unit.
So, you know, I'm not mad at them. And I do think, you know, this is more about pointing out the hypocrisy of all of the humanitarian bullshit that goes around the world about, and even the hypocrisy of human beings saying that as a species we're better than this and we're better than that. Here's a clear indication that as a species we're not. You know, we're not better than petty shit. We're not better than, as a group, being okay with the extermination of large quantities of people, when especially if those people are not people that look like us or that feel like us or think like us or share our culture or anything like that. We only seem to be humans to people that exist in the sameness that we exist in. Anybody that
right.
exists as a other or as a different, we don't give a damn about their humanity.
Right.
And so this whole social experiment of humans living together and blah, 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 and overlooking, because that's a whole other show, because we really don't teach the acceptance of differences. We teach the ignoring
tolerance.
Of differences. And that's totally, but just to go back to this idea, and even those black folk that are defending giving money to the church, that are, well, the church has various artifacts from blah, 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 blah. That's all bullshit. The black churches that burned down here in America, they're historic to our community. And a good
right.
chunk of y'all wouldn't lift a red cent to rebuild or rebuild.
Because they don't give a shit.
Right. So let's not pretend like there's some sort of cultural whatever going on here. From that,
we got to look in the mirror. We got to be real with ourselves and look in the mirror and really understand what we ain't doing for ourselves. Now, that doesn't mean that we still not victims of white supremacy. That ain't what that means.
Right, right, right.
But we definitely are not, like, in the 1600s either.
Right.
So we can do more for ourselves at this point, but we keep choosing not to. It's better for it to be an idea of what we should be versus our reality, because that's
right.
entertaining. We're still stuck in that entertainment space of, you know, as long as I can imagine, sit there and imagine, I don't really have to do anything. I'm at a point where I'm highly entertained at what's going on, but I'm unhappy with the conditions that I'm in. And I'm unhappy at the responses, because white people got resources. And when white people got problems that they care about, they take care of them. You can't be mad at that. Now, going back to what we said at the beginning of this, if you are, like, in the humanitarian lane and all those things, no, we can side eye you and look at you a little bit different, but I'm not mad at white people for white people. But don't come out here, don't be the person to come out saying how much of a humanitarian, how much pro-people, you don't see color, all these things here, you for everybody. But when terrible situations happen and black nations or black neighborhoods or black whatever, these people are nowhere to be found. Now, you can post on Facebook, you can hold up signs, and you can be in the Instagram post holding up the sign saying, I'm white and I fight for black rights, whatever, yeah, but when it's really time to help black people, still nowhere to be found. So we're looking at that hypocrisy, but we're also looking at the hypocrisy within the black community, because we can do more, but we choose not to.
Yeah, 100%.
So, 100%. But also, in addition to this, you know, you had the three churches that burned in Louisiana. That's one thing you're talking about, historic churches being burned.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a historical thing going on here when we talk about what's happening with the black church in our community versus the black church in their community. Like, there really is a lot. There really is a lot to get into with this conversation that we simply aren't going to get into with this show. But the fact of the matter is, all of that is fluff, in my opinion, because the black churches that have been burned or attacked in the black community here in America have historically been historic black churches. So, you know, and let's also remember that churches have a long and storied history of fighting for black people in America. So, and we're not talking about post-civil rights. We understand that churches shifted and they've been on some bullshit ever since the 70s and 80s. But prior to that, churches produced most of the freedom fighters. So, you know, we got to keep that in mind as well, and also understand that there's an accountability issue here. There are so many other issues here that we could talk about, but all of that boils down to what you said, which I agree with wholeheartedly. Black America is an idea. It's not a reality. It's not even an eventuality, because we don't know that it's ever going to come to pass. But at the end of the day, you know, y'all are full of shit when y'all try to make up all these excuses as black people in America for why we should donate to the church in Notre Dame and totally ignore the historical black churches right here in America that are being, you know, that have been under attack for the last couple hundred years.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. It's hypocrisy at its finest. It's us being full of shit. It's a whole lot of things in one, and we need to be real with ourselves about what's going on and what's happening. In some cases, man, we are our biggest enemies to ourselves, because the way we treat ourselves and what we allow others to do to us and things like that. But when we're looking at these atrocities and these situations that happen around the world where a great number of people are displaced or killed or affected or harmed in a specific way, and we choose to kind of placate it, overlook it, just take it as be nonchalant about it. Man, you know, hate it, you know, kind of feeling like that. And it's like, man, you know, we really can't continue to exist like that if we're being honest about what we're doing out here in these streets, in this world. We're not going to live long. We're not going to exist long. And we already had a show. I think last social discussion was talking about how, you know, jobs are going to be scarce in the next 30 years and things. And if we don't start helping ourselves on a national, hell, just on the local level, helping ourselves on the local level would even empower us more to, in the future, be able to make global impacts with ourselves, but just on a local level, us helping ourselves. Like, when are we going to start doing that? You know, and it's kind of, not to bleed into the Nipsey Hussle, because we wouldn't say that, but kind of same thing with, and we're seeing out of that, how we're really not learning enough, because people are saying, well, we're supposed to support people while they're alive, but people still not getting support, and just on a global scale, on a local scale, on a national scale, you know, black people aren't supporting black people the way we need to truly get ourselves out of these holes that we in. And until we start to do that, we're going to be in trouble. Like, black people, not all of them, because that's being really, you know, ambitious, but there's nothing wrong with that. But a good number of black people in one city should be able to organize enough to be able to build something that can help those who choose to participate and those who can't. I still believe that if you build something, even though people choose not to be a part of your organization, you still should be able to build something that can help others. You shouldn't hold no resentment. But That's just me.
No, I'm with you.
But, you know, that's this situation. So Notre Dame, Cyclone, what's his name? Lima? What's the name of the Cyclone?
Cyclone Adai.
Yeah, Adai. Yeah. Cyclone Adai and the burning of the church. So we ain't gonna beat that subject into the ground. But man, give us your thoughts. You can comment on the post. You can hit us up on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Hit us up on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Tell us your thoughts about what you feel about the support or lack of support that the people from the Cyclone, the Mozambique, and Malawi and other countries are receiving versus the Notre Dame Cathedral versus the burning churches in Louisiana. All right, so let's next get into this reparations bullshit. Because you're telling me that people have to put together a committee to possibly think about coming up with something that can resemble some reparations for Black people. So it is, like I said earlier, H.R. 40, Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African Americans Act, sponsored by Representative John Conyers Jr., Democrat from Michigan in the 13th District. It was introduced January 3rd, 2017. The committee's is housed in Judiciary, the latest action house on 3/8/18, assuming first sponsorship. Ms. Jackson Lee asked unanimous consent that she may hereafter be considered as the first sponsor of H.R. 40, a bill originally introduced by former Representative Conyers for purposes of adding co-sponsors and requesting reprinting pursuant to Clause 7 of Rule 12, agreed without objections. And then to scroll down, gives a summary. It says, this bill establishes the Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African Americans to examine slavery and discrimination in the colonies in the United States from 1619 through the present and recommend appropriate remedy. So this is the website I'm looking at comes from the Congress website, congress.gov, and it's breaking down the bill, have different tabs and things. So overall, when you first learned of this, Pat, what were your first thoughts about it?
This is bullshit. That was my first thought because here's the deal, right? Congress makes committees all the time. And the vast majority of the time, if the committees even continue on and do anything, because a good chunk of them don't, but even when they do, they usually generate reports that are late and that are never acted on. So creating a committee is kind of Congress's way of tabling the issue so that they never have to deal with it again, while simultaneously scoring political points for doing something. So that's how I viewed it. You know, okay, you got the committee. Good job. Now what? Nothing. And we know it's going to be nothing. Because even if they do agree to the committee, which they probably will, because nobody wants the negative political fallout that would come from voting no to this. You might vote no to a reparations package, but nobody's going to want to vote no to a committee that's simply going to study the issue. So you create this committee, fine. You put the committee together, fine. And I do believe there is something in here about how to create the committee. And I'm scrolling through it right now. So they do have establishment procedures and what the committee is actually going to do. And I think even that, the scope of that is so limited because it's going all the way back to basically seeking reparations from 1619 to 1865 and all of the problems that happened in between those issues, which to me is going to be a very difficult issue to get because records are thoroughly incomplete about how many slaves were transmitted, what the lifestyle of those slaves was like, what they experienced as a whole, And even the narrative about how they were treated has begun to change. So what sort of information is the committee going to be looking at? Even to that, a larger problem is going to be, if you adjust for inflation, which is going to be significant, how do you quantify the amount of damage done from that period of time, 1619 to 1865? And I believe just based off of that piece of information, that perspective, the committee is going to come back with something that's fundamentally fucked up.
Yeah.
Even when you look at the plans that a lot of the people are putting forward now, Cory Booker has his baby boomer plan, where all babies get $1,000 attached to their name, and they get more based on the socioeconomic status of their parents. That's not reparations, but he's billing it as a reparations package. All babies are going to get that money, not specifically African-American babies. And if a white baby, it grows up in a family that's just as poor as that's poorer than a black baby, then that white baby is still going to get more money. So it's something that tries to do things about the economic disparities, but it's one of those where it wants to address everybody, which is another issue with this, is would they even have the balls to look at only black people? So you go through here, and I think the age bracket is fucked up, 1619 to 1865.
Definitely.
I just talked about some of the issues. Why? But even to that, it makes it seem like we're done. There was a whole lot of shit that happened after 1865. Are we going to get a committee for that? Is there going to be separate reparations for that? How are we going to deal with all of the shit that happened after? What about from 1865 to 1965? And even from there, what about from 1965 to all of the shit that's happened through to the present?
Well, and the one I'm looking at from congress.gov, they have the different tabs. They have one that says summary, one text, one actions, titles, amendments, co-sponsors, committees, related bills. Now, I'm going to read this again. It says, shown here, introduced in the House on January 3rd, 2017, Commission to Study and Develop Reparations Proposals for African Americans Act. This bill establishes the Commission to Study and Develop Reparations Proposals for African Americans to examine slavery and discrimination in the colonies and the United States from 1619 to the present and recommend appropriate remedies. But once again, as you read and as I was reading, once you get into the text, it's talking about from the 1600s, from 1619 to 1865. And as you stated, a whole lot of stuff happened between 1865 and 2019.
Right.
And it's still happening. So, the fact that you got to sit there and put together a committee to consider reparations is insulting. And then the short time period that you've been between 1619 and 1865, it's like, all right, when they first started bringing slaves here to when they made slavery illegal, that's the only time we're going to cover, even though redlining, Jim Crow, all these other things, civil rights movement, the modern day Jim Crow civil rights is happening now. We're not going to really consider that because, you know, we don't really know how. We really don't want to do this. But it's just, like you said, it's all just conjecture, man. It's all just people talking. What it's saying, it says, let me read this. In bold, it says, a bill to address the fundamental injustice, cruelty, brutality, and inhumanity of slavery in the United States and the 13 American colonies between 1619 and 1865, and to establish a commission to study and consider a national apology, to establish a commission to study and consider a national apology and proposal for reparations for the institution of slavery, its subsequent de jure and de facto racial and economic discrimination against African Americans, and the impact of these forces on living African Americans, to make recommendations to the Congress on appropriate remedies and for other purposes. And it says, being acted by the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America and Congress assembled. And it says, Section 1, short title, This act may be cited as the Commission to Study and Develop Reparations Proposal for African American Act. And it's just, you know, the more you get into it, the more it's like they break it down a whole lot of bullshit. Because it's really just a bill to look at reparations rather than a bill to put together action plans to actually make sure reparations happen. But we know the United States got the money to do it.
Right, and well, here's the deal. Reparations doesn't have to come in the form of a payment, but I encourage everybody to go and look at the text because the summary says it's to establish a look at reparations from 1619 to the present. It's not until you actually get into the text that they repeatedly hit you with 1619 to 1865. But even when you look at how this thing is made up, the commission shall be composed of 13 members who shall be appointed within 90 days of the date of enactment of this act, which things like that have been broken before. Three members shall be appointed by the president. That would be Donald Trump. Three members shall be appointed by the Speaker of the House of Representatives, which would right now be Nancy Pelosi. But prior to that, it would have been a Republican as well. One member shall be appointed by the president pro tempore of the Senate. To my understanding, that would be either Mike Pence or that would be, what's the man with the turtleneck? I forget, Mitch McConnell. So, because right now my mind is drawing a blank because I know that the vice president is actually the president of the Senate, but he only votes when there's a tie. So you're either looking at Mike Pence or Mitch McConnell, but I'm pretty sure you're looking at Mike Pence. So that's four members of the 13-member committee appointed by the president or the vice president or some other committee, some other Republican. Six members shall be selected from the major civil society and reparations organizations that have historically championed the cause of reparatory justice. So that means you're looking at people like the NAACP, the who else do we have? Who's that organization that does all the legal work? I'm drawing a blank right now. Come on, Joe, help me out.
Legal
shit. Me hanging. You're looking at who's the organization that does all the legal work?
For who specifically? Like
for black people. Well, not really for black people. They say it's for black people, but they really do it for everybody.
You talking about like legal shit or something like that?
No. Black organizations, Joe.
Being crunk.
No, man. But basically, you're basically going to be looking at the NAACP, the maybe the ACLU. You know, you're going to be looking at all of these historically black organizations that over time have either become clubs for the social elite amongst the black community.
Oh, you're talking about organizations like that.
Yeah, or you're talking about organizations that used to be pro-black, legitimately pro-black, but over time have become something else. You're not looking at organizations. Well, hell, and in this case, they might actually have somebody appointed from the what's that new movement that started with the death of Trayvon Martin?
Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter. You might actually be looking at people from Black Lives Matter. So,
see, you threw me off when you talking about legal organizations who handle legal stuff.
Well, I was thinking specifically about that, and I still can't think of their name. I was thinking specifically about that legal organization that releases all of the legal reports and all of the statistics and stuff on Black America. But I still can't remember that name, and it's going to come to me right after we finish recording the show. But so out of this 13-member board, like I said, three-pointed by the president, three-pointed by the House, one-pointed by the president pro tempore of the Senate, and six selected from civil society and reparations organizations that have historically championed the cause of reparatory justice. So, again, you know the NAACP is going to be in there. You know that. And you know Black Lives Matter is going to be in there. You know that. And they might just pull three from the NAACP and three from Black Lives Matter and be done with the whole thing. So, and then you can pretty much guarantee that if Trump is president, he gonna pick three people that's just gonna fuck everything up.
Yeah, I mean, if you are being appointed, well, I mean, come on, they weren't even really serious about, you know, making sure that this reparations thing is taken serious if you're gonna allow Trump to appoint three people to make sure it happens. So, I mean, like, come on, man.
And you can't say this thing was developed while Obama was in office because it was brought forward while Trump was president. That means that they had Trump in mind when they wrote this and put that the president shall appoint three people. So if you really want to do something for Black people, and I get some people might say that's just a caveat so that it'll pass, you got to get a Republican something. How serious are you about reparations?
Right. Because, I mean, like, let's just be real. If you're going to be straight up honest about this reparations thing and repairing what happened, repairing, like, doing something to repair the relationship between Black and white Americans, and not necessarily giving us power, but the power structure kind of doing some kind of humble gesture. I wouldn't say being humble, but doing some kind of humble gesture to say, all right, we saw our niggas. But, you know, he'll go a little bit, leave us alone. You have to be serious about making sure that Black people get enough to be able to create and sustain wealth over generations. And that would take a person who is not extra racist. Let's just be real.
And then, too, this movement, this whole thing, when you really look at it, is centered around the treatment of Africans that were transported to America and the development of that social underclass. But I don't see very, and you know with laws, you got to be very, very, very literal with what you mean. Otherwise, they will find ways to undercut. And there is something in here mentioned about doing research on federal and state laws that discriminated against formerly enslaved Africans and their descendants who were deemed United States citizens from 1868 to the present, which is probably why that summary says what it says. But let's be clear here. The bulk of this thing is focused on chattel slavery and the kidnapping of Africans. So there's also this secondary thing here, and I think we as Black people, we do need to acknowledge our African roots, but we also need to accept the fact that all of the people that have been negatively impacted by racism in America are not necessarily descendants of enslaved Africans.
Right.
There are a lot
so
of Black
to be
people that came. What's up?
So you have to be real specific, because that's when the ADOS stuff come in, though.
Right. That's exactly what I'm getting at. You gotta be, because this, I can see this cutting a lot of people off who are championing it right now, only to find out that they don't have any African slave descendants in their bloodline. They're still Black, and they've still been discriminated against. But because they aren't a descendant or a direct descendant of a slave, they get overlooked. Even though their people still experienced redlining and Jim Crow, the Black codes, and everything else, they still experienced all that same shit. But because they didn't experience slavery, they're not entitled to reparations. And that becomes a dangerous game, and it also becomes a tool that pits Black people against each other. Now, I'm not saying this bill is shit. I think it's an honest, valiant attempt by somebody to do something. And I think for that, you know, it should be commended. But I'm not finna sit here and be like, this shit is good or it's enough, because it's not. I want more than a fucking commission. And I want the commission to have more power than to just be able to beg people to come sit in and give testimony and deliver reports.
Yeah, I mean, you got to get real specific with this if you're talking about making sure that black descendants of slaves, according to this, between 1619 and 1865, be able to get what would be called reparations. So now you're going to cause a rift between a large number of black people who are, you know, descendants of African, just people here, but not necessarily descendants of black slaves here in America. Because people who can be proven as descendants of black slaves here in America will feel some type of way about sharing the money, and they probably should, probably shouldn't. At this point, I ain't really put enough thought into it to say if I really know or not, but It's something to consider. I know Dr. Anderson has talked about this a while, and he had it. I thought when he was talking about it, it was a little more sensible as far as making sure that black descendants of slaves get what they are deserved of getting. But at the same time, black descendants of slaves deserve to get the reparations they get, but black people also have been discriminated against and have experienced the throes of racism deserve reparations as well. So, you, like you said, you have to be, you got to be crafty in how you splitting that up, but at the same time, white people really don't care, because that would still have black people going at each other.
Well, I mean, I think you can do it, but one, it's gotta be broken down. If we're going to do this in terms of legally or in terms of whatever, in terms of like politically, it's got to be broken up. And there needs to be more than one set of reparations. And the way this committee is set up, it very well could represent that there needs to be more than one section of reparations. There needs to be a section for slavery, but there needs to be a section for everything else as well. And, you know, like I said, the committee could very well come to that conclusion if this thing ever passes. But all of that, for me, is skeptical, because we've seen this before. We've seen committees before. We've seen them not do what they were supposed to do. We've seen their reports be largely ignored. So, you know, we're looking at that right now with the special counsel with Robert Mueller. He just released his report. And right now there are already people like, so what? It don't mean nothing. Let's keep moving. So, you know, it doesn't mean anything just to have a committee create a report. But as black people, I think we got to get as far away from this 8-0 shit as possible, because it doesn't do us any favors. At this point in time, the vast majority, I'd say 90-95% of us, have no clue realistically about whether or not we're descended of slaves. What we do know
right.
is that we black in America, and we're undercut because of it. So. And the way reparations traditionally works is you get reparations for every specific instance of injustice that needs to be corrected. So that means we don't need just one set of reparations. There's a set of reparations for slavery. Then there's a set for Jim Crow, black codes, the Tyon laws. You go down the list. There's a set of reparations for each one of those individual actions that took place against the black community, just like there was reparations for white slave owners in various states when the slaves got free.
Yeah. It's a situation that can be solved, but let's just be real, motherfuckers don't want to. So that's why we at where we at with this bullshit proposal. That's all it is a proposal. So, I mean, to be real honest with you, but if you really want to break down the nuances, you have to make sure that everybody's taken care of. But in reality, if they really wanted to do something about reparations, they wouldn't put up no proposal to talk about reparations. They would just go ahead and put up a proposal to go ahead and shell out reparations. the crackers lying.
Hmm.
So they young people. So we encourage y'all to go look this up. Once again, the title of it is H.R. 40 Commission to Study and Develop Reparations Proposals for African Americans Act. And make sure you read all the information. Don't just read the summary, because you're going to be disappointed. So, all right, so our last subject we want to talk about, you know, give our condolences to Nipsey Hussle's family and his friends and his loved ones, his community that lost it, that lost somebody who was truly making a difference in the Slauson area in California, and truly impacting people. He's what I would consider a real influence, not like these stank Instagram people who think they're influencers because they just look good, but somebody who's actually making a difference, impacting people's lives, had the resources and used his resources to better his community and help other people help themselves. So we do want to give our hats off to that, to Nipsey Hussle, give his condolences to his family. But a lot of the fallout that comes from this Nipsey Hussle death is we're starting to see a lot of the stupidity in Black America, but also too many people trying to come up off the man's legacy and name. And it's just a lot of stuff that you kind of got you kind of looking at people sideways with this Nipsey Hussle thing. So, hey, where you start with it, Pat? Where you start?
I mean, I think you have to start with recognizing Nipsey Hussle as a force in his local community. And I think you have to make sure that you put an emphasis on that. Nipsey Hussle was concerned about his local community. And
yeah.
That's it.
As it should be.
Nothing wrong with that.
He should have been.
Anybody that take offense to that don't understand the importance of people being focused on the development of their local community. Everybody is not interested in the national picture. They're interested in their local area, and we need more people there. And not to say that Nipsey Hussle wasn't interested in the national picture, but I am saying that almost all of his actions were focused on his local community. So at the point he was at when he passed, he was a local hero. And so I think you start by recognizing him there. From there, we address the respect that we should have for our local heroes. And it should encourage more of us to want to figure out who those local people are, because I can guarantee you, no matter where you live, you got a Black person in your community doing what they can with whatever resources they have to make your community better. Find those people and support them while they're alive. That way you won't be a hypocrite when they die. You know, if you don't necessarily support what they're doing, I don't give a damn. I know a lot of people don't seem to want to be, you know, out of the loop when a motherfucker die. Everybody want to act like they know you. So why don't you find these people and support them when they're alive? That way you won't be full of shit when they die.
Well, that's one of the things that's getting me with this, man. It's like I don't know if we've really learned from this situation.
We haven't.
Because I hear the rhetoric of, you know, support people while they're alive. But as you're saying it, you're ignoring people while they're alive.
Right.
And then if I'm not saying don't support David Banner and Killer Mike. I'm not saying that. But if the information or the statements and things that have been put out is, hey, let's make sure we support David Banner and Killer Mike too. But you're ignoring the people like that's in your local neighborhood. Support everybody. Everybody who's doing something to make your situation better, support everyone. Don't pick and choose based off of popularity. Support everybody who's helping to make your community better. Or in the long run, you won't have anybody who's willing to help make that community better.
But you know, Joe, that's the case because people are missing the first step of what I said. Respect Nipsey Hussle as a local community member, a local hero, a local star. Everybody keeps trying to make him a global phenomenon, a national phenomenon, some sort of international figure. Nipsey Hussle's activities were focused on his local community. So if you take from Nipsey Hussle dying that you need to support David Banner, you're missing a big part of the picture, in my opinion. And you can support your local heroes and national heroes. Like, we can support more than one person. So it's not like you got to pick and choose. Before, frequently, those local people get ignored because the national people have the spotlight. And that's where we're at. Nipsey Hussle was fortunate enough that he had the money to do what he wanted to do in his local community.
But he was still, like, as a community activist, because that's what I would call him. As a community activist, he was mostly supported on a local level. Like, as an artist, for those who knew about his music, he was supported on a national level. But as an activist, as somebody who was making his community better, most people didn't even know he was doing that. Some people did. If you was on Nip, you knew exactly what Nip was doing. But outside of that, you really didn't.
Made music.
I know that. I know that. But it's like, you know, like Biggie said, you're nobody till somebody kills you. Unfortunately, that's how he blew up to the nation. Unfortunately. But we're doing it again. We're not really recognizing our heroes when our heroes need to be recognized. Like, don't give me no posthumous shit. Like, I hate when I see black people who have been historical giants or who've done massive things for the community. When they die, they get the posthumous thing. Like, fuck all that. You keep your goddamn award. Or you can give it to me 2 months ago when I was alive.
But, you know, I want to beat this dead horse. Nipsey Hussle was a local community activist, as you put it. He was a local guy. And most people didn't know who he was before he got killed. And now all of a sudden, people are making him the next coming of Jesus Christ. Literally. Like, literally.
You got Jermaine Dupri and somebody else was saying he's Jesus Christ. I'm seeing videos of people who were talking about he's connected in the bloodline with King Solomon and King David in the bloodline with Haile Selassie.
Don't none of that do no good now because he's dead. So don't none of that even matter anymore.
But remember, Jesus died at 33, too. Both of them died at 33, so you see
you know
connection.
What? How amazing that is to be dead? You know how many people died at 33? Millions? Millions. It's at least 100,000 33-year-olds died today. At least.
Hey, dog.
So what's the point?
But he had Eritrean roots, though, dog.
Yeah, well, know what? It's at least a couple thousand 33-year-olds have died today with roots in that same region of Africa.
Hey, man. See?
And the disrespect to his father to say that he was really Dr. Sebi's son. The disrespect to his family to try to connect him to some other roots other than his own. And the disrespect to his community and the things he tried to do to misrepresent all of those things so that you can try to come up off of this popular narrative is bullshit. And you're doing more harm to the community than good, because when kids look back at Nipsey Hussle now, they aren't going to be able to see the truth of what he was and try to mimic that, because that's an attainable goal. You just painted a picture of the man as being the next coming of some sort of official deity. That's too big.
Yeah, because that's you know what I was asking in the group chat not too long ago. I was asking, what's the difference between a martyr? Between somebody being martyred and somebody being deified, like, where's the line that's drawn between the martyr and the deity? Because
in our community, there isn't one. We deify our martyrs. There is no. When you see pictures of Martin Luther King and Jesus on the same shirt, There's no line, no distinction. And I'm all down for ancestor veneration and all of that. But there is still a difference between venerating an ancestor and deifying something. So
yeah.
I think with Nip, the respect component has been lost. And now that people think that they're being respectful by making him seem bigger than he is, when they're really disrespecting his memory, his work, and his family, more importantly. Because I can only imagine how I would feel as a father if my son died and somebody tried to say that another man was the father of my child. You know?
It's like, my biggest beef is the people trying to come up off the narrative. That's my biggest one. And the ones who create their own narratives, like I was telling y'all, I was watching this video, this girl who claims she's from Eritrea or whatever, and talking about, you know, in a whole 15-20 minute video of how he descendants of King David, King Solomon. But you make the statement, don't back it up with no evidence or information, just make the statement, just keep talking. And you know people are going to click because people want to see what you're talking about, whether they agree with you or not. And it's kind of bamboozling how that people are agreeing with these just random videos of these random people. And people are just making these statements and just saying this, and it's like, man, this man represented a lot for that area who had a lot of hopelessness. And y'all are trying to make what he did for his people in his neighborhood like second class to your wanting your 15 minutes of fame off of this hot topic. And that's just disgusting.
Right. For all of these people, how many of y'all know where Eritrea is? You know?
Nah.
How many of y'all... What's up?
A lot of people didn't even pay attention to it before, you know, Nipsey died. So.
Right. And how many of y'all are following what's going on in that area as a whole with China building its first foreign military base in Djibouti, which is on the southern border of Eritrea? How many of y'all are following what's going on in Ethiopia? How many of y'all are following what's going on in the Sudan, where Prime Minister Omar al-Bashir, or the President Omar al-Bashir, just stepped down by protesters, remnants of the Arab Spring, who thought that they were going to get a transitional democratic government, but the military took control, and the potential ramifications of a military state in that area, which is on Eritrea's western and northern border. How many of y'all are following what's going on in Saudi Arabia or in Yemen, which is right across the Red Sea? Like, so don't give me all of this. He's from Eritrea and this, that, and the third, and you don't know where it is. You're not following the politics of the area. You don't know the culture. You haven't bothered to do anything, but you just want to spew out some random shit to make yourself seem like you in the know. I'm 100% in agreement with you, Joe. That shit is mad disrespectful and it's mad frustrating. I'm in 100%, and I know all of that shit about the area because I follow the area, not because I knew that Nipsey Hussle was from there. I didn't know he was from there, and I don't even think
right.
It matters. Like, does it really matter
that he's from there? Well, if we're going to be technical, I'm going to be technical, Ted. His father, as far as we know, his father is from Eritrea, has the Eritrean roots, but he's from Westside, Texas, Los Angeles.
Well, see, you told me something I didn't know. But again, does it matter where he's from?
It doesn't matter where he's from, but that's the disappointing and the frustrating part. It's not where he's from. It's about what he was doing
right.
with his community, his immediate community that he lived in on a regular basis. He saw an issue and took action. But also, it's like everything we're going to need to support. Let's support David Banner and Killer Mike. Well, what about Slim Thug and his restoration things that he's been doing? What about Marshawn Lynch, hell, even DJ Envy now. There's a lot of people who've been out here with these restoration projects and things that are happening, but they're still alive. Mm-hmm. There was no dramatic thing that happened around him, around these people. But there are even more people who are out there who have no name, no fame, but are doing millions of things. Like Warwick Dunn, the football player Warwick Dunn, has been putting single mothers in homes around the country since the 90s. Fuck out of here for talk about y'all support people. Like the biggest thing Warwick Dunn get from black people is a meme. Ever since Warwick Dunn had the means to give back, he's been putting black single mothers in homes, and black America as a whole ain't gave that man his due yet. Fuck out of here with all this stuff here.
But you know what? If Warwick Dunn died tomorrow, all of a sudden everybody would be like, I've been supporting Warwick Dunn.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Like you said, he's been doing that shit for decades.
If you don't watch football, you don't know who Warwick Dunn is. If you ain't no Florida football person, you don't know who Warwick Dunn is. If you ain't no, like, that Atlanta Falcon football person, you don't know who he is. But just as a social activist, social activism ain't stuff that make people popular. Most 90% of the social activists, maybe even 97% of social activists, don't have no national name.
Right.
You have those who slip through the crack, but for the most part, and we're not just talking about people who provide entertainment and people who just do talking and speakers. We're talking about real activists. It's the difference between an advocate, a speaker, and an activist. People who are doing things, not just talking.
I mean, look at On the Shoulder of the Giant by my homeboy Joseph Ward. Okay? Local community activists doing things in the North Florida, South Georgia region. You know, and we could go down the list because there's a lot of them. We know people all over the country doing things in their local areas. And the number one thing they say is need more local support. This is the number one thing they say. And finally, we get a local guy doing local shit that manages to reach a level of national prominence, and all of a sudden, people want to ignore the fact that he was a local guy and make him bigger than he ever was when he was alive.
Yeah.
Tell me that shit ain't disrespectful.
I mean, it is on all counts, and that's why it makes me mad, especially like for everybody who's out here doing what they're doing, because it's not like it has to be done. Like, I don't have to give myself my time, my resources, and my energy to help make my community better. I could be like everybody else and just be like, man, you know what? We're gonna just going to give up on this. Because, you know, after that one thing that you heard after Nipsey got killed, it's like, well, if you're going to get killed and helping your community by community members, why help your community? And it's like, well, so stuff like this can't happen no more. That should be simple. But it's like, do people really give a shit outside of catching their 15 minutes of fame? That's what it's mostly about.
100%. I mean, 100%. I'm with you when you're right. And the Nipsey Hussle shit is extremely disappointing. Extremely disappointing. Because we should be beyond this. We should be better than this. And it's so disappointing because you also keep hearing people talking about how we're waking up as a community. And I keep looking around and I keep saying, where do y'all see this at?
They're saying we're waking up as a community because more black people are talking about home ownership. More black people are talking about real estate. More black people are looking at financial literacy. More black people are getting degrees and things like that. But really look at the landscape. We're still not earning, still don't control no more than like 2-3% of the national wealth. We're not progressing. A lot of the issues that we had, we still have.
Right. So just because motherfuckers is achieving more on the economic level doesn't mean we waking up as a people. And just because motherfuckers is doing more conversating on Facebook and on social media doesn't mean we waking up as a people. People use social media as an escape. So they think that they not in real life. That's the nature of what you dealing with on social media.
If waking, so at the definition of waking, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I'm just going to say, if the definition of waking up is talking more about what's going on, just that, then, yeah, you got more people doing that. But if the definition of waking up is making sure we change our situation, we in a coma.
Yeah, and we ain't waking up no time soon. We ain't got no plans to wake up. We sleep too good. So I don't. And people have been saying we waking up for the last 4 or 5 years since Trayvon Martin died. People have been saying we waking up.
No, we ain't. We ain't. We still doing the same thing. Still, like, we still marching. Somebody died. Somebody get killed, and we still marching.
God, you know, Nipsey Hussle get killed, and since we really can't find a reason to march for that, we just create all kinds of bullshit stories and propagate them regardless of the type of damage that's being done to his family, his memory, and his legacy. You know what I'm saying? Like, and people, you know, it's funny because people used to call me a hater for wanting to push back on all these broken narratives. I used to be like, yeah, you're right, I am a hater. But it's not a Nipsey Hussle. It's a view in your bullshit. I hate that shit. I do. Stop it. Heaven forbid one of us pass away and they start doing all this same shit. I might get a gun and start shooting people.
Hey, man, look, y'all know I speak for myself, so don't let nobody. If I ain't said when I was alive, don't believe somebody saying it when I was dead.
I'm going to be straight up with everybody. Look, everybody that know me for real know that I do all my shit behind closed doors and I don't want nobody to know about it. So if anybody say that they know me, they probably lying. I'ma just say that right off bat. If they say they knew me, they probably lying. Unless they was on a show with me at some point or another, and that's why I like these shows. This is a record of everybody I know. Because 9 times out of 10, if you ain't been on a show with me, I don't know you. Period. I don't have nobody else in my life outside of the people that I've done shows with. So that's Joe, that's PC, that's Mo. Tam has been on a couple shows. You know what I'm saying? So this shit is just crazy, though, that you even got to preface your death like that.
Hey, man, you know, nowadays, but it ain't even nowadays. People are fanatical like that. And that's the way humanity has been, especially us who've been, engineered to operate the way that we operate, especially as black people. It's like we're more sensational. And as far as being fanatical and having real fairy tale like ideas of life, but not having real actions to make, you know, things happen. We could talk about liberation all day, but won't put in no work to make sure that liberation happens.
Right.
And it's ridiculous. I mean, we have a lot of people who know in our community, a lot of so-called celebrities and the people with the platforms and things, who are no different from motivational speakers.
Yes.
At this point, because it was a time where the knowledge needed to be poured out because knowledge was missing. And the knowledge needs to be poured out so people can know why to take action. It was a time where that was appropriate, but you still had building to do. But we're no longer in a time to where we need people just teaching the history. We need people to also be taking action. Like I use myself. Yes, I teach the history, but I also take the action. Like I create what I can in my community with those who are like-minded to go out in the community and pour as much in the community as possible. I join organizations. I join specific organizations who, I don't care what the name of the organization is, I look at the mission of the organization and what you're doing is helping people in the community, especially our community, to get better. I'm down with that. Even with my job, one of the reasons like I enjoy my job is I get to help black people in the realm of health. And educate black people in the realm of health. So it's just various things. It's more than just, we have this podcast network and I have my own source of giants, not just talking and giving information, but it has to be action on the other end. And if you have no action, then you're full of shit.
Yeah, and I think, to me, going back to this Nipsey Hussle thing, one of the tragedies about it is not the conversation itself, but it's the conversations we aren't having. The conversations about local heroes, the conversations about getting involved, the conversations about how to support, how to become one, how to keep them safe, how to protect them, you know, the conversations about what it takes to become one, all of those conversations that are real lessons for the community when dealing with people that are trying to help the community. None of those conversations are being had on the scale that they need to be had, because motherfuckers would rather talk about how he was assassinated for dropping the Dr. Sebi film, or how he was assassinated because he was the second coming of Jesus Christ, or, you know, all of these other stories. All of this shit is just, it's just taken away from and preventing us from having the conversations that we need to have.
Right, because, I mean, in this, like, to say that, you know, the government killed him because they, because he's making a Dr. Sebi documentary, or, I mean, to me, that's a stretch. There is no way you can really prove that, because there's so much Dr. Sebi information out, and so many other holistic healers who have the ear of the community, who they're not even thinking about, that it seems like. But it's just to me, a better story would be, okay, he's taken out because he was impeding gentrification. That made more sense, even though you can't prove it. But even by the local government, was like, well, you're stopping our gentrification, so we got to do something about it. That made more sense than about the Sebi thing to me. But it's just not even getting to comparing conspiracies, but it's just when we get to the point of first thing we do is give out conspiracies, then we spend time arguing and debating conspiracies, there's less time that we can really spend on doing what we need to do, because we keep arguing and debating all this dumb shit, but then complaining about still being in the same position that we're in. Because we have to remember, no matter what, at the end of the day, we're still in a position where we really can't protect ourselves like we need to.
Right. Yeah.
So
that's it.
I mean, like we say in the beginning, though, all praises go to Nipsey Hussle and what he was doing as an artist and as a man. Because that victory lap, one of the reasons why I like that victory lap album, because he was dropping so many jewels and so much game in that, man. It's like I was telling somebody this the other day, and it just came out like that, and I thought about it after I said it. But you remember the feeling you had when you first listened to T.I. album, I'm Serious?
Yeah.
But you also remember, like, the immaturity and the dope boy nature of that album, though, right? But just the rawness and just the feel that you had. This was a mature, grown-up, I'm Serious kind of, like, feeling that I had with this. It's like, he's not talking about, you know, the dope game and shit like that. You know, he is talking about some of the gangster stuff that he was in, you know, Rolling Sixties, whatever, that's what he do. But he was fitting so much game that it was giving information that people can benefit from. He wasn't spitting stuff that was destructive. And that's why I say it's like that grown up, matured, I'm Serious, because it gave me that feeling like I had when I first listened to T.I. But it's something that I can be inspired to listen to. It's something I can learn from.
No, I'm with you. I can dig it.
So, hey, man, it's the Freedom Train Podcast Series. I'm your host, Joe Sword, as always. You know, my homeboy, Patrick Irvin. We do what we do when we do, every Wednesday right here on the Freedom Train Network. Remember to support Lessons from the Screen on Patreon, patreon.com/LFTS, Lessons from the Screen. Also, patreon.com/ the Fix, support that. Support PAX Inc. on Patreon, patreon.com/PAXINC. Also on the Shows of Giants, patreon.com/OTSOG. That way, you know, you can have the Patreon thing popping going on. We just gonna keep busting y'all in the head with these live podcasts, man. We appreciate everybody who supporting us, and we're just going to keep doing what we do when we do how we do. So, part of the shot, Pat.
Power to the people.
Hey, man, you know me. Make sure y'all wash your hands after you leave the bathroom. Peace out.